Hello, this is Gideon Rothstein, and this is a responsive day for the 28th of Iyar. Now, ordinarily, my rule is that I find these responses by looking for responses written on a certain day. I try to make that close to an ironclad rule. Sometimes I let it be who the person writing in did it, but by and large, I really try to stick to that. But the 28th of Iyar is Yom Yerushalayim, is the day that we celebrate the recapture of Yerushalayim, and as it happens, I think there weren't that many tshuvot written on that day anyway, but I found this one tshuva that I thought I'd read just because I wanted to see it, that relates to Yom Yerushalayim, and so the 28th of Iyar is mentioned in the tshuva, and it's all about issues of that, and I thought that one day I would just break my rule and allow myself to do that. If you object and are horrified by this, even not horrified, please feel free to email me at grothst@gmail.com. So let's begin with thanks to the OU and to Rabbi Jack Abramowitz and to David Hachhauser for helping us put the shirim online. This is a tshuva from Shut Beit Mordechai, the first volume, Siman Lamed Gimel. Now, Shut Beit Mordechai, and I think here, even more than most tshuvot, the biography is relevant and important. Rabbi Mordechai Fogelman, who wrote Shut Beit Mordechai, was born in Chernovich in 1899 to a family from a Hasidic sect, and he was ordained by the Maharsham of Berzan. He has a brother-in-law who was an important Rav, and he was a cousin of Rabbi Shapiro, who was the head of the yeshiva of Chachme Lublin. And he was a Rav himself. With the outbreak of World War II, he managed to escape to Eretz Israel, and I think that's relevant because this is somebody who just managed to avoid the terrors of the Holocaust, the horrors of the Holocaust. He gets to Eretz Yisrael, and in 1940, he becomes the Rav of Kiryat Motzkin, which is right next to Haifa. So he's a Rav in the north, and he has a Shut Beit Mordechai, which lots of his responsa and halachic monographs. Rosada Kriv Kook published it in 1971, and he passed away in 1984. So The experience of 1967, this is for a man who was in Europe, moved from Europe when Europe was tending terrible for the Jews, and managed to get to Eretz Yisrael, and now experiences the recapture of Yerushalayim. And he in his writing, so honestly and openly shares the enthusiasm of the time. And 50 years down the road, I fear that sometimes we lose some sense of that. I also see sometimes people who were not on board with that when it happened at all, and for decades later, then all of a sudden they talk as, oh, it's so great, like they jump on the bandwagon without admitting that they were wrong. Anyway, that's a whole discussion. So this, Rav Mordechai Fogelman tells us that the victory of the army of the Tzvah Hagana Lisrael in the Six-Day War against all of those things is one of the great and wondrous victories in the history of war, he says. Especially the wars of the Jewish people against its enemies, he says, Ra'inu ayin ba'ayin. We've seen it with our own eyes. Ki lo yanum v'lo yishan shomer Yisrael, the protection of Hashem. And I think it's important to be clear about that necessity or the importance, the religious importance, of that experience. When you see the war happen, how do you react? Do you say, oh, the Israelis preemptively struck, are they this, are they that? Or do you see the hand of Hashem helping the Jewish people? So this, Rav Fogelman, this should be, Mordechai certainly is on the second side of that question. And how Hashem guarded us, and that is Zohu Nechamato Hayichida Shel Am Yisrael Achari HaShoah, and it is the sole comfort of the Jewish people after the Holocaust. Remember, 67 is 22 years after the end of World War II. So the Holocaust is so alive for people. It's so there. The people in Eretz Yisrael, many, many, many of them are survivors, and even those who are not survivors, likely or very many of them lost relatives in the Shoah. And then you get this, and he says, and this is the only way you can have some comfort for the Shoah. You had enemies who wanted to destroy the state and the Jewish people living there, and that's being rebuilt in there, and now we got this salvation. And then he points out, in the time of the Gemara, there was a book called Megillat Ta'anit. Megillat Ta'anit was composed towards the end of the Second Temple period, he says, B'sof Bayit Hasheni, and it mentions a whole list. Megillat Ta'anit is really basically a list of days in the calendar that the Jewish people did not have Ta'anit or Hespet. One of the major markers of a day that's a happier day in Halacha than most days, right? If it's not going to be an actual full-fledged holiday, is you wouldn't allow Ta'anit. So there are lots of reasons people would choose to fast on certain days. You might fast because there's no rain or there's some other trouble coming to a Jewish community or to the state, to the land, to the Jews of the land of Israel. You might fast because you feel bad about something. You might fast because you saw a Sefer Torah drop. There's lots of reasons why people would fast. So there are days when, because of events that occurred on that day, those are days that we're not mitanin. We don't fast because we want to keep the happiness of the day, and fasting contradicts and runs counter to joy and the simcha and the celebration. So too, ein maspidin. Somebody passes away, you have to bury them, but we wouldn't have eulogies that day, and you can do it, you know, after Shiva, whatever it is, because you wouldn't have eulogies. Why wouldn't you have eulogies? Because also eulogizing somebody gets in the way of having usually, which is, and the goal of eulogies, remember, is to mourn the person, to speak about the person's qualities, the person who passed away's qualities in such a way that the people there are upset and even cry. That's really what a hesped is supposed to be. It's supposed to be, I remember Lichtenstein, Zechel Zechel Bracha, speaking about the fact that often hespedim are just way too generic and they don't tell you very much about the person. The example that he gave was, I remember him talking about that when Von Cutler passed away, he went to the funeral and most people got up and you would have no idea that Ryan Kotler was any different than any other Gadol Batorah until he said, until a certain Balabas, a certain regular person, Irving Bunim, got up and spoke, and then you finally got a sense of Ryan Kotler and what made Ryan Kotler special. So a hesped is supposed to be a way of evoking the person in a way that arouses the sadness emotions among all who have gathered to escort them on their way to their burial in the next world. That experience of a hesped contradicts. So Megillat Tanit had a list of such days that we don't have hespedim because they will get in the way of the joy of the day. Okay, so they were all reflective of miracles and war, internal wars, external wars, right? And none of them, says Rav Fogelman, other than Chanukah and Purim, and by the way, we don't basically keep Megillat Tanit anymore. That's already the time of the Gemara. They said that we don't really keep it to Megillat Tanit. But his point is, none of those that were days that the Jewish people set up back in the time of Bayit Sheni, back in the time of the Second Temple and the First Temple, and set it up for in perpetuity for people to keep, and they kept for many, many years, none of them was as weighty or as remarkable in its outcome as the victory of the Jewish people that we've seen in the Six-Day War. Because after the time of the second, after the destruction of the Second Temple, after Churban Bayit Sheni, the Roman government, right, kicked everybody out of Yerushalayim in time of Vespasian and Titus, and they put out coins and that said Judea Capta, right? That said the Jewish people are captive. We captured Judea. And the event that told them that it was clear that Judea had been fully captured was the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash. So that the Romans already knew, is what Rav Fogelman was saying. The Romans knew that the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash and the conquest of Har HaBayit was in fact the final and full proof that the Jewish people had been subdued and they had lost their political independence. So if that was the sign of the complete loss of Israeli independence, of the Jewish people losing their political independence and their national sovereignty, then when we're winning in reverse, it's the reverse. And just like that was the complete destruction, this is the conquest of Jerusalem, of the old city, including the place where the Beit HaMikdash was, including Har HaBayit, including the Temple Mount and the Kotel HaMaravi, hu hashlamat milchemet hashichrur. It is the completion of the War of Independence that started on the 5th of Iyar. Now that's his perspective. His perspective is that, and I think a lot of people have this perspective in 67, I think we forget about it, and I think even in Israel today, I think there are plenty of people who live outside of Yerushalayim, and Yom Yerushalayim is not such a big deal to them. But here's a Rav from Kiryat Motzkin, up in the north, right, near Haifa, and he's pointing out what I think is true. There's another place, you know, sort of a trivia question, but I'm going to give the answer in a second, but a trivia question is, where's another place where we sort of think of one holiday as being the completion of another holiday? So the answer is, you can find it in the Ramban on Chumash, that he thinks of Shavuos as the completion of Pesach. And he thinks of the Omer, as sort of, he says it, as being like a long Chol HaMoed. He has reasons in Chazal that say it, in the Gemara that say it, whatever, but as a long Chol HaMoed to get to Shavuos. So Rav Fogelman is sort of saying that he thinks that it turns out, you wouldn't predict this ahead of time necessarily, but he thinks it turns out that from the 5th of Iyar until, and that the conquest of Yerushalayim, the old city, is actually unfinished business from 1948. So I think that's an interesting perspective on the whole thing that to keep in mind. And then it's not that Yom Yerushalayim is just another Yom, it's that it's sort of the completion and the finishing up. And it's almost like when you celebrate Yom HaAtzmaut, you have the day that you enjoy, that you have joy in your celebration, but it wasn't quite complete yet. And maybe even Yom Yerushalayim isn't quite complete because we don't have the actual rebuilding of Beit HaMikdash, but it's another significant step along the way of completing what was started on the 5th of Iyar. And then he says, and I'm not going to get it, I'm not going to check him up on it, but his position is that if you look at the Gemara and Megillah, Yud Dalet Amud Aleph, it's clear that any miracle that happens in the land of Israel to the Jewish people, everybody agrees you should say Hallel. Obviously, not everybody agrees because there are plenty of Jews who don't say Hallel on Yom Yerushalayim. But his position was, and he's writing this in 1967, his position was that it's clear to him that this is something that deserves a Hallel for the conquest and for the victory in the Six-Day War, because it was a double victory, he says. It was Mishibud Legula Umimav L'chaim. Now, the reasoning in Megillah is that we know, they said, we know you should say Hallel on, I think, Purim, but we don't say Hallel on Purim because we have the Megillah. But the reason was, you know you should say Hallel on Purim because you said Hallel when you left Egypt, and that was Mishibud Legula, from slavery to freedom, right? Then obviously, Mimavet L'chaim, which was what Purim was, because they were threatened with death, and they came out. So Rav Fogelman is pointing out, because he knows that Gemara, he's pointing out that in the case of the Six-Day War, and of reconquering Har HaBayit, you have Mishibud Legula and Mavet L'chaim. It's Mavet L'chaim, it's death to life, because the Arab nations were threatening us, and there was a likelihood, a lot of people thought, that it was they were going to now come and attack the Jewish people and wipe out the Jewish people. That was certainly the Arab rhetoric of the time, and I remember I was a child, I was like not even a child, I think I was a toddler at the time, but I remember hearing afterwards people talking about how in the early days of the war, especially when the Israelis had a news blackout, it wasn't at all clear how the war was going, and there were a lot of people who were very worried that the state of Israel might be wiped out. That was a real possibility to people. The threat was real. I remember hearing, and maybe I've told the story before, so if I have, I apologize, but I remember hearing my father, Alav Shalom, talk about there was a guy in Washington, D.C., he said, who was the owner of the Giant superstores, and so you can look them up online, you can find the names of the people, I forget which one it was, but wrote out a check for $1 million for the state of Israel, you know, in the early days of 1967 of the war. And I remember thinking that was a lot of money, because back then $1 million was really a lot of money. So it was really a time of Shibud Legula, of being a conquest. Har HaBayit was owned, it was controlled by the Arab nations, by the Jordanians, theoretically, and the Palestinians. And so we got it from it being conquered and owned and controlled by non-Jewish powers to us having it. That's Shibud Legula and Mavet L'chaim, because there was an existential threat to the state of Israel, and then lots and lots of people would have died. So he says everybody says, he thinks that according to that, everybody should agree that you say Hallel with a bracha, with the name of Hashem, and he quotes, you know, Shut Chaim Sha'al, which is an old Jew, I think it's Rav Chaim Falaji, which is from the 1700s, who would say that about saying Hallel. Then he throws in parentheses, in the meantime, between that day, you know, the 28th of Iyar, when it happened, when it was clear to me that we should say Hallel, and now, already the Mo'itza Rabbanut Rashid, the council of the chief rabbi of the state of Israel in 1967, had decided that the 28th of Iyar should be Yom Yerushalayim, because that was the day when Yerushalayim was freed, was conquered or reconquered, and that was when Mamakom HaMikdash and Har HaBayit, when the place of the temple where the Beit HaMikdash used to be and the Temple Mount were reconquered, and they made that as Yom Yerushalayim, as a day of Tefillah VeHodaya, of prayer and thanks, B'Amirat Hallel B'Bracha B'Shem HaMalchut, with the saying of Hallel with the full bracha at the beginning and the end. So that, of course, is the position of the chief rabbi, and then people who disagree, and there's all the sorts of fights about it. One of the most important things that I've learned about this issue was a long time ago, a rebbe at Gush, Rabbi Yamin Tabori, who now could use really a refuah shleima of nisim and niflot, who needs a miraculous, really miraculous recovery, but we can hope and pray for that, pointed out that a lot of people get caught up in the technical question of whether you say Hallel or you don't say Hallel, right? What prayers you do and how you do and don't change the liturgy. And he said he thinks that that's a mistake to get focused on that. It wasn't a question of whether you do or don't say Hallel in his mind. He said, let's say you say Hallel. Great, you say Hallel. But that's not enough. Saying of Hallel doesn't itself suffice for the day. It's like in Hanukkah, it's not like if you just said Hallel on Hanukkah and then lit candles at night and that's all you thought about Hanukkah, that would be an ideal performance of Hanukkah. So he used to say that on both Yom HaTzmaut and Yom Yerushalayim, he thought it was important for Jews to have some kind of celebratory events to celebrate the thing, not just to say the Hallel, even if they do say the Hallel. Okay, so I thought that was an important point. So this is back to Rav Fogelman, who says that, you know, the Rabbi Nur Rashid established this day. So that's the 28th of Iyar. 7th of Sivan, 1967. 7th of Sivan, let's remember, is the second day of Shavuot outside of Israel. In Israel, it's just a day. So on the 7th, and it was, not 1967, but last year, it was the first of these, not last year, whenever you're listening to this, it was in the summer of 5776 in 2016. It was 7th of Sivan was the first of the Shiurim of the Responsa Day project. That's where we started, actually, the day after Shavuot. As part of Matan Torah, we started the Responsa Day project, which I hope you are enjoying and you find valuable in your lives, and I'd love to hear about it. girothst@gmail.com. 7th of Sivan of 1967, Rav Fogelman says that when the national gathering of rabbis at Heichal Shlomo, let's remember that Heichal Shlomo, nowadays, it's sort of like, it seems like just a building in Yerushalayim across the street from, you know, from the Supersal and from the Linear Plaza and next to the Great Synagogue, which now I think is somewhat a more impressive building. But for a long time, Heichal Shlomo was the seat of the chief rabbin of the state of Israel, and important events happened there, and now I think it's trying to come back, and they're working on it. I'm not saying anything about Heichal Shlomo today, I'm just pointing out that today people don't know the name as well, but for this Rav Fogelman, he's on the 7th of Sivan. Now, it's not, I think it was a one-day gathering. So I think the idea was that right after Shavuot, a lot of rabbis would gather together. They just didn't Shavuot with their communities. They would gather together for a one-day, it seems like, it was like a one-day conference. He says, when the conference ended, the Kinus HaRabbanim HaArtzi Beheichal Shlomo ended, I decided to go with some friends, right, with a bunch of other rabbis. We went to see the Kotel, which had just been freed. So it's 9 days later, right, depending on how you count it. But if you count the 28th of Iyar, 28th of Iyar, 29th of Iyar, 1st of Sivan, 2nd of Sivan, 3rd of Sivan, 4th of Sivan, 5th of Sivan, 6th of Sivan, 7th of Sivan is 9 days later. If you count both days, it's 9 days later. So he goes down to see it, and they're not the only ones. He says, Misha lo ra'ata simcha etala, kotel lo ra'ata simcha miyamav. This is a takeoff on Gemara's to talk about. Whoever didn't see the Simchat Beit HaShoeva. The Simchat Beit HaShoeva was on Sukkot, when you used to be libating water. You would take water from the Meshiloach, you'd bring it to the Mizbeach. For all days of Sukkot, you'd pour the water on into a canister at the one of the corners of the Mizbeach, the southeast corner of the southwest corner of the Mizbeach. You would pour the water into it, would be part of our prayers to Hashem for a year of good water, which is also a year of good parnassah. So the Gemara says that those, and you'd have smachot every night as part of that. So you have these great smachot. They're sort of expressing our confidence, I think, that Hashem would give us a year of good rain. So he's taking off of that thing. If you didn't see the Simchat the Kotel, he means the Simchat the Kotel in 67. So it's so hard for me, let alone for anybody else, right? And I feel like I'm very dedicated to these things and very alert to these things. It's so hard to try to remember that level of joy. He's saying, I went to the Kotel, and if you haven't been to the Kotel and seen that simcha of just having reconquered the Kotel, he says thousands of people were coming down to the Kotel, and their faces are full of joy and enthusiasm, and they're davening with such fervor and such thanks to Hashem, to the Adon HaNiflaot, to the Master of Wonders. Right? And then he says, and among these people, now all these people who are coming are people who are thrilled about what occurred and who are so excited to have the Kotel back. So there's nobody here who's in any way questioning that this is a great event for the Jewish people. But Rav Fogelman notices that there are many of them who also tore their clothing. Now why would you tear their clothing? You tear their clothing because there's a Gemara that says, Gemara Moed Katan, that says, and we pass this halacha, it's in the Shulchan Aruch, in Orach Chaim, Taf Kuf Samach Aleph, if you see the Beit HaMikdash in a destroyed state, you're supposed to tear your clothing. So these people did. We're going to get to it more in a little bit. Right? You tear your clothing. B'ot, when I saw this, he says, I turned to the people in my group, and these are all rabbis, and he said, now remember, he's a 68-year-old man who was born in Europe. He came to Israel during the Holocaust. He saw the War of Independence, and now he's in the Six-Day War. He says, after this kind of victory over our enemies, after we have freed the old city of Jerusalem, I don't think that we need to tear Kriya anymore when we come to the Kotel. I think we need to say a Shechianu. Now, I'm not sure if he meant a Shechianu every time. He meant every 30 days if you haven't been there, but he says a Shechianu. And he said, Naimarti vasiti masa, and I did it. Be'ofen spontani. Right? Spontaneously. Now, I think that, to me, is also something that I can't really imagine myself doing, right? That he had the halachic self-confidence. That even though there's a paragraph in Shulchan Aruch that says, you tear Kriya, he says that was for then, and he's not, like, looking it up in books. It's not like he wrote a research paper on it. He's clear in his mind. that is before we reconquered it. Now that we reconquered it, not only don't we tear Kriya, we say Shechianu, and he says Shechianu, and he said it. He says, "Begal hasimcha ha'ilait she'afifa otanu berotin at a kotel." It was sort of riding the wave of the ultimate joy that enveloped us when we saw the kotel. Right? The only remnant that we have of the Beit HaMikdash, of the temple that has now been freed from the hands of the enemies and the non-Jews who have been holding on to it, have been holding on to it basically for 1900 years. Not this one group of non-Jews, but it had been in non-Jewish control for 1900 years. So that's what he held. And then he said, but he knew that there are other Torah scholars who held no. They are happy to get the Kotel back, but they also tore Kriya when they saw the Kotel. And I said, you know what? It's time to think about that. So therefore, I'm going to go back to the sources, and I'm going to look it up and think about it. So he says, there's a Braita in Nedarim and in Shavuos, which you can look up, but it says, let's say somebody wants to create a neder. Now, a neder is when you try to say something that should be prohibited to you. And the Torah gives us the ability. It's like an odd thing on its own that we can't talk about right now, but the Torah gives us the ability to create a nether, meaning that it becomes usher to us. And the way you do it is, though, you have to say, I want this item that I'm trying to create the prohibition on to be like another item that's already prohibited. But that other item that's already prohibited has to be an item whose prohibition was created by a nether as well. So, for example, I dedicate something as a korban to the Beit HaMikdash. So, when I say it's a korban, now it becomes prohibited to get a benefit from it because it belongs to the Beit HaMikdash. So, that's something I created. So, if I want to say, you know, meat should be prohibited to me, then I'm going to make meat prohibited to me like that korban. So, that's what you can do. So, when the Braita in the Nedarim and in Shavuot wants to give us examples of it, other examples that it gives are Kiyom Shemit Bo Aviv. Right? Like the day one's father passed away. This is an early, early source for the idea that people fast when they have yahrzeit, aviv imo, either your mother or your father. When a parent, the day that a parent passes away, that you would fast on that day. That's an early source for that. This different discussion, but it's a source for that. Or another example of that praita is kiyom shiraiti Yerushalayim b'churbana. The day that I saw Jerusalem destroyed. So that's a source for the idea that the day people would see Jerusalem was the day that they would accept upon themselves fast days if they saw Jerusalem in its destruction. The Shmuel says that's only if you actually had a nether on that. But in any case, you see the level, this is what Fogelman says, you see the level of distress and mourning that people had for Yerushalayim. They would make it into a regular fast day. Then the Gemara in Moed Katan says, and these are tares that never get sewed up again. One more cut and talk about, there are times when we tear our clothing in halacha when theoretically we're allowed to sew that up again. Now, nowadays, you tear something like that, if you sew it up again, nobody would wear it because we don't wear things like that anymore, but in the times of the Gemara, they certainly did. So there are tears that you could stitch up loosely, but then there are tears that you could sew up fully. So these are tears that you would never sew up fully again, and among those tears are Are Yehuda Val Mikdash Val Yerushalayim. If you tore your clothing for the cities of Yehuda, seeing them destroyed, or for the Beit HaMikdash, or for the temple, or for Jerusalem in its destruction, then that would be a tear you wouldn't. And then in that Gemara, Rav Elazar says, "Haro'eh arei Yehuda b'churbanan." If you see the cities of Judea destroyed, and thank God today there's much less of that than maybe there once was. So, and this pasuk in Or HaChaim, Tavkuf Samechav, you say it's a pasuk in Yeshayahu, "Arei kotshecha hayu midbar." You say your cities, your holy cities, became a desert. You see Yerushalayim in its destruction, Omer, Tzion haita midbar shimama, that the Zion was a desolate desert. Ukishroa Beit HaMikdash, you say, Beit Kodshenu v'tifartenu asher hilalucha bo avotenu haya l'srafat eish v'chol machbadenu haya l'chorba. I can never remember that when I'm there, but that's the pasuk. Use our holy temple and our, the wonder that our forefathers praised you in it had been, was burned, and all of our dearest things, Hayu L'Chorva, became desolate. So then, that's the pasuk. That's a Gemara in Halachat Shulchan Aruch. So he says, Rav Fogelman says, I want to add to that though, that before Harabayit was freed, so seeing Mekom HaMikdash, when we say you see Mekom HaMikdash, it meant you see the Azara, right? It's not just you see someplace, you see the Azara, not if you see the walls of Har HaBayit. So that would, in Israel today, you'd have to come at it from the other side or from above. But other than that, you mostly don't see the actual Har HaBayit. So even if you held that today, you still have to tear Kriya, you would only do it in those situations. So seeing the Kotel would not be that, because that's Kotel Har HaBayit. And you don't have to tear Kriya on the Kotel, on the wall of Har HaBayit. And he points out that that's Rav Tukachinsky Paskin. In any case, the Beis Yosef to the Torah. So I said before, this is Paskin Shulchan Aruch. Now the Beis Yosef, which was the Shulchan Aruch's commentary on the tour, the earlier vision of Shulchan Aruch, he wrote that Arei Yehuda Bechur Banan Dekamai. When we say you see desolate, you see cities of Judea, that means they're desolate. Nobody's living there. And then Joseph says, "V'afshar de kol shehem biyad nochrim," that as long as they're in the hands of non-Jews, even if people are living there, that's called Chorbanan. And the Beit Yosef says, "V'chein ikar," and that is in fact the prime way to hold. So that would mean it's not a question of the Bach there agrees, and he points out there's a story in the case of Gedalia, right in the book, in Sefer Yirmiyahu, after Beit HaMikdash is destroyed, and Gedalia gets killed, or whatever, there's a group who come to Mitzpeh, and they can see Yerushalayim, and you see that they're Ter Kriya there, even though they didn't know that Gedalia had been destroyed, they were Ter Kriya, and that's because it was under the control of the king of Bavel, and that's what it is. So if that would mean, if the definition of destruction is foreign control, so then, and the Baal Kafter of Perek says that therefore, he says, then Kriya, tearing, is an expression of foreign control, then today, after this great salvation that Hashem has provided us, then there's no reason to tear Kriya anymore. If you're tearing Kriya, he says, and this is, it's almost like you're being ungrateful. It's almost like you're not recognizing. I think this is a crucial, interesting point, right? Hashem does something for us. Is there an obligation to recognize what Hashem does for us? I think he's saying there is. And if we refuse to recognize, we act as if life is still terrible. When Hashem did this great, unbelievable thing, there's a kfui tova, there's a lack of gratitude there, and a lack of recognition of a miracle. And recognizing miracles and a luck is very important, because if you don't recognize miracles, you could fall into the trap of thinking that there's no specific hashkacha, that Hashem isn't ever involved in the world, then you get into a whole terrible loss of faith and lots of other things. So the recognition and the importance of noticing that there are miracles, says Rav Fogelman, is a very important thing. So that would be why you shouldn't tear Kriya. Then he says, and to me this also was a really, really interesting thing, he says, I wrote this up, and I put it into Hatzofeh. Now, Hatzofeh was a newspaper for decades. It was the newspaper of the Mizrahi movement, and on the 22nd, the issue of the 22nd of Sivan of Tavshin Kof Zayin of 1967, basically a month or 3 weeks, a little over 3 weeks after the conquest of Yerushalayim, I wrote this article on Hatzofeh saying we shouldn't tear Kriya anymore because we've reconquered Har HaBayit. I find it fascinating that there was a time in the Jewish people, and not so long ago, when like a newspaper would have discussions of Torah issues. Right? So he's writing this article. Another Rav David Yechiel of Werner, who's from Chadera, he wrote back in Hatzofeh. So he's willing to have this conversation in like a Mizrahi newspaper. On the second of Talmud Tavshin Kof Zayin, he says, I think though that the Beis HaMikdash is still in its Chorban. And he says he thinks there isn't, even though it's theoretically under Jewish control, remember that soon after 66, after the war, they let the Vakf, the Muslim powers, sort of control Har HaBayit, even though it's under overall Jewish control. But you've got the Mosque of Omar, right, in the Dome of the Rock, and you don't have Korbanot. So he says he thinks that if you see the Beit HaMikdash in its Korban, he thinks you do have to still tear, even though, meaning his argument isn't that you're wrong about the Six-Day War and you're wrong about the salvation. His argument is, but there's still a ways to go. And if you see the Beit HaMikdash, he agrees, you see Yerushalayim, you don't have to tear anymore. But you see the Beit HaMikdash, the Makom of Har HaBayit, the actual place of the Temple Mount, of the courtyard of the Temple, which you can see from rooftops on the Old City or from the other side, he thinks you would still have to tear it. That's what he held. Then on the 13th of Tammuz of Tavshin Chav Zayin, in Hatzofeh, this whole conversation is in a newspaper, which is a remarkable thing. In a newspaper, you have a back and forth between Talmidei Chachamim about how to interpret and how to react halachically to the events in the Six-Day War. Rav Tzvi Yehuda Cook. Rav Tzvi Yehuda Cook was the son of Rav Cook, of Rav Avraham Yitzchak HaKohen Cook. So Rav Tzvi Yehuda Cook was also the head of Rav Sadar Rav Cook of Merkaz Rav Cook for a long time. He says it's true. The Beis HaMikdash is not rebuilt, and it's also true that basically because we don't have that phrase of bechorbano, right? And therefore, you could have claimed that the kriya doesn't depend on who controls it, just the fact that it's not standing. And until it's standing, you would tear kriya. Nonetheless, Rav Yehuda held, like this Rav Fogelman held, that the real avelos for the Beis HaMikdash is because other nations are in control of it. Whereas today, Rav Yehuda held, we're controlling. Now that we're controlling it, then the ikuvim, the reason we can't rebuild the Beit HaMikdash, is from our side. They're mitidenu, they're halachic, they're political. Now, I have to say, if they're political, I wonder whether that wouldn't mean, shouldn't that mean that it's also a sort of not under our control fully, but I think that's a discussion what it means to have a Shivan Malchiot in whatever conversation, but that's where he held, and therefore he held mostly like Rav Hope Fogelman held, and also Rav Gorin. Now Rav Gorin, and with this, Rav Gorin's thing is mostly about when they were actually going up there the first time. He told the soldiers that he was with, don't tear kriya, make a shechiano. Theoretically, I could have argued that was because it was the first time, and it was such a remarkable experience the first time, but the later times you come, maybe you would still either tear kriya and say shechiano, or do one or the other. But his ideas were in Atzofa as well on the 13th of Av of Tashrin Chav Zayin, that when you have such a great joy, that after 2,000 years of exile, we've come back, and of destruction, and of Holocaust, and we've come back, and we've reconquered it, to mix into the sadness of mourning, of destruction, he thinks it's inappropriate. That we would tear kriya along with the Shekhiano, he thinks that doesn't make sense, especially since the kriya is by virtue of seeing it. And he says, if I'm seeing things now, because I'm coming to see it because of the great victory, and that should bring us the joy of the great victory that we've reconquered it. There's no way that you can at the same time, Rav Gorin is saying they're contradicting to each other. There's no way that you can also tear kriya at the time. Especially when you have to see this, he says, you have to see this as the first, you have to see this as the first step to the rebuilding of Beit HaMikdash. It's an optimism that has not yet been fully borne out, but we can hope that this is, in fact, as Rav Gorin had said, the Echalta de Gula, it's really a strong and important first step along the way to having the full redemption speedily in our day. So those are a reminder of the excitement and the enthusiasm and the expectations that 1967 aroused in people, and the question of the specific halakha question coming up with Yom Yerushalayim, Chaf Ched Iyar, the 28th of Iyar, as written by Rav Fogelman, about whether or not you still have to tear kriya on Har HaBayit, if you see the temple, the area of the temple, or whether you just say the Shechianu and celebrate Hashem's great salvation to us of the Chafardiyah. So, for Yom Yerushalayim, a responsive day, trying to remind us of the feelings and emotions that they had back in 67, that we should hopefully have every time we have the great merit to go see the Kotel, go see the Great Wall. With thanks to Jack Abramowitz, Rabbi Jack Abramowitz, David Hakas, the OU, I bid you a great day.